Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. Come through with us and enjoy. It's good to be back. So did you hear Madonna and Oprah both took nasty falls on stage this past week? They both took tumbles. Madonna and Oprah in unrelated events, unrelated episodes. Why do I mention it? I don't know why. Just felt like it caught my attention that two of the most evil, wicked, destructive people in the history of entertainment both fell embarrassingly on stage this week, just as the entire global economy begins to collapse. It's just weird, that's all. Maybe it's an omen. Or maybe I just found it entertaining that two people I dislike took nasty tumbles on stage. All right. There's no real deeper meaning to it. So let's move from there to the livestock file, where we've been talking about the locust swarms that have been ravaging Africa for the past month or so. Well, over in China, they have prepared 100,000 ducks, and they expect to send them to Pakistan to intercept the locusts. The ducks, you see, according to the Chinese Agricultural Sciences Academy, the ducks are biological weapons that can be more effective against locusts than pesticide. One duck is able to eat more than 200 locusts a day. And so 100,000 times 200, can we do the math, kids? Is that 10 million locusts a day that they could eat, or is that a million? That's a million locusts a day. No. It's 10 million locusts a day. I'm not very good at math. You guys check the math on that one. But 200 locusts a day for a duck, that's pretty good. That's a good day for a duck. They're going to do a trial over in China later this year. And then if everything goes according to plan, they're going to send the ducks to Pakistan. And by then, well, the locusts will have destroyed the Horn of Africa. And But maybe the Chinese can save Pakistan, I suppose.
Why can't they send it now?
They can't. I don't know. They said they have to try. Well, maybe they don't have an agreement with the Africans. See, Pakistan, if I'm not mistaken, Pakistan is on the same landmass as Russia and China. And so the Chinese are worried. I think China shares a border with Pakistan. So the Chinese are, they have a direct concern with locusts crossing Pakistan. Or maybe the ducks aren't ready. I don't know. Or maybe they're not sure if it'll work. But if a duck can eat, somebody knows that a duck can eat 200 locusts a day. His name is Lou. He said that in a phone interview with MSN.com. Oh, no, it's MSN. Maybe they really don't know what's going on. Anyway, so if you're a hungry duck, we've got a job for you. Anyway, there's ducks in Africa. They should get their act together. I don't know why the government of Uganda hasn't dispatched ducks to... Oh, that's right. They don't really have much of a functioning government in almost any African country. That's a shame. All right. Now, so there you go. Chinese ducks may save Pakistan from the biblical swarms of locusts. Meanwhile, I definitely have a frog in my throat. Meanwhile, a Chinese citizen who lives in British Columbia, which is in Canada, in case you matriculated in the government schools, she has pleaded guilty in a federal court over in Boston. That's right. She pled guilty last Friday to paying $400,000 to get her son into UCLA. Yes, this is part of the bribery scandal, the college bribery scandal. So you got a Chinese mom pays $400,000 to get her son into UCLA, proving not all Asians are smart. Yeah, $400,000 for UCLA. So her son can go smoke dope and go to rave parties. All right. So, shattering that myth. Okay, now we go to the Jerusalem Post, where there was a survey. Let's see, who took the survey? European Jewish Association took a survey last week in Europe. They interviewed 16,000 people. I should say they sent a questionnaire to 16,000 respondents to their survey. There were 16,000 respondents from 16 different countries. The survey was presented at a conference about anti-Semitism organized in Paris by the aforementioned European Jewish Association. 25% of respondents agreed with the statement that Israel's policies make them understand why some people hate Jews. Okay, 25% said that. And then the other one was that a secret Jewish cabal runs the world. 20% of Europeans said that a secret Jewish cabal runs the world. So there you have it. And you know why this is, folks? This is a regular historical cyclical event. Here's how history generally goes between the Jews and everybody else. So everybody else attacks the Jews, kills the Jews, and beats the Jews down. That happens. And then a few Jews survive, and over the course of a generation or two, it seems like there's more Jews in charge of more stuff than anybody else. And then everybody gets angry and jealous because the Jews are so successful. And it's not that Hebrews are inherently smarter than anyone else. Although there may be some genetic advantage, you never know. But mostly it's because of their heritage and their common link to the living God and the scriptures and all of that. And so the Jews just end up working harder. They're generally less immoral. They're less flagrantly immoral, just generally speaking. And so they get ahead more than most other people. And so after, 20 to 60 years, you look around and it seems like the Jews are running Hollywood. Well, it's just that the Jews in Hollywood work harder than the Gentiles, just generally speaking, that's all. And so they end up in charge of stuff. People get jealous. And then anti-Semitism, which is where we are now. The anti-Semitism is back on the rise. People are jealous of the success of the Jews, and they think that a secret Jewish cabal runs the world. Okay, so there you have it. Anti-Semitism on the rise in Europe again. And, these other survey questions, I don't really care. Anyway, it's just that the Europeans hate the Jews, and they're jealous of the Jews, and that's a shame. But there we are. Speaking of Jews, Steven Spielberg is in the news, and not for a good thing. Steven Spielberg, you may or may not know, is married to one Kate Capshaw, who was an actress back in the 80s or something like that. Kate Capshaw. They're married and they have a daughter. They adopted a daughter named Michaela. Well, Michaela announced this week. Well, this is just sad. She announced that, she announced how she was working to get a license to become an exotic dancer in Nashville. So apparently you have to be licensed in Nashville if you're going to be an exotic dancer. Other kinds of dancers, you might be able to get away with no license. But exotic dancing, I'm not even sure what that is. Does that involve, like, feathers? Feather boa? Anyway. She also says that she's embarked on a career as a sex worker. She wants to be a porn star. That's Steven Spielberg's adopted daughter. She says she's already made videos, and she's uploaded them on the internet. You can subscribe. They have the information here. Michaela says her parents, Steven, and his actress wife, Kate Capshaw, are not upset. She says, no, they're even intrigued by my life choices, says Michaela. But a Spielberg source, no, here we go. A Spielberg source told the Post, the As Michaela said, Steve and Kate are nothing but supportive of her, as they are with all their children. Uh-huh. But a family friend, interviewed later, said that outwardly Stephen and Kate are supportive, but obviously they're embarrassed by her sudden public admission that she's become a sex worker. All right. I feel sorry for Steve-O. You just never know. Although, you know, he's a godless Jew. He's a Jew who's turned away from his heritage and has made films that that have generally pulled down the morality of Western civilization. Just generally speaking, he's been a net negative when it comes to lifting spirituality or depressing it. He's been a net negative. And so he ends up with a daughter who wants to be a porn star. It's just very sad. All right. Steven Spielberg been married to Kate Capshaw for 29 years. All right. And that's a fine how to do, huh? You adopt a young girl, you help her, probably give her a better life than 99.959% of all people on the planet as far as physical comfort and lack of... she's never suffered food insecurity or anything like that. But anyway, very sad. Very sad. Now, from the Straight to Hell file, speaking of porn stars, Roman Polanski won Best Director at France's César Awards. That's France's equivalent of the Academy Awards. Uh-huh. And I don't know what his movie was called or what he did, but he won. Roman Polanski, a convicted rapist and child molester, he got the votes of the Academy there in France. Now, Polanski wasn't actually there. He said he had to skip the celebration to avoid being lynched. That's because there were protesters there. In fact, when it was announced that... child molester and rapist Roman Polanski had won the Best Director award, numerous actresses walked out, stood up in front of God and everybody, and walked out. And there were about 100 people who staged an actual protest in front of the venue. And well, there you have it. There's the state of civilization. Roman Polanski, not only is he no longer hiding... He's winning awards. Just very, very sad. In the Me Too era, just didn't quite stick to Roman Polanski, I guess. The Me Too movement didn't take down Roman Polanski. Would have been nice if it had, but no, not gonna happen. All right. So now the big news, of course, the big news out of South Carolina is that nobody cares. That's the main headline story out of South Carolina from this past Saturday is that there is very little interest and everybody is really, really bored. And it's sad to see that a man who can barely cobble together a cogent sentence every 8 or 10 sentences actually won a primary. It's just sad. It's a sad commentary on the state of political leadership in America today, that a doddering old fool could actually win a primary, and that's it. And we're bored, and we don't care anymore. We don't care. So should we go on to the coronavirus? Talk about the coronavirus, or should we stick with politics? Yeah, stick with politics. Can I make fun of? Are there any other So everyone's urging Pete Buttigieg and. Klobuchar, I don't even know her first name. Jennifer? Beth? Steve Klobuchar? I don't even know who Klobuchar is. They're urging them to drop out, and we would like to do the same. We would like to urge all, especially Buttigieg, because he's disgusting. He dropped out? Buttigieg dropped out? Yeah. Oh, how did you know? She's watching the news. Look at that. Buttigieg dropped out, eh? Well, there you have it. Breaking news here on the Weekly Worldview, at least for me. Because I had no idea. What about Klobuchar? She's probably out too. I don't know. Anyway, it's all very boring and it's all relatively meaningless. Somewhat entertaining to watch Joe Biden kind of stumble around and bumble. And somewhat terrifying to think of Bernie Sanders as an open socialist running for president. But all in all, I would say the headline, the takeaway, is very little interest. And I'm your host, Doug McBurney. That's right. All the girls have dropped out of the Democrat. If Jeff Klobuchar dropped out, but Booty Gag was the latest feminine Democrat, the latest feminine Democrat to have his or her career crash. It's all very sad for such a progressive party. All right. Goodbye, Pete. And we go from him. To the creep file, just the creep file, yeah. And the story is that at NBC, did anybody watch NBC over this past weekend to get the latest and all the insights and all the spin and on the Democrat primary there in South Carolina? Well, if you watched MSNBC, then you may or may not have noticed the absence of one Chris Matthews. Does everybody remember Chris Matthews? Chris Matthews, he got the chill up his leg. Was it the chill up his leg or a thrill up his leg or a vibration or something up his leg when Barack Obama announced? Anyway, Chris Matthews, who's made a career out of the fact that he interned for someone who may have known John F. Kennedy, something like that. Or maybe it was not John F. Kennedy. Maybe it was the drunk. The guy who killed the girl in the car. Not Bobby. Ted. Ted. Maybe it was drunk Ted that Chris interned for. Or I don't know. He polished his shoes or I don't know. He shopped. He got him socks. And bought him T-shirts. Something like that. Chris Matthews has basically somehow cobbled a career together off of that. But now he's gotten himself into trouble because it turns out he's a creep who treats women really creepy. In a dirty kind of way. What a shock, right? To look at and listen to Chris Matthews and to find out now that women are coming out of the woodwork, accusing him of being a sexist, accusing him of sexual harassment. And not only that, he's also somewhat bumbling, stumbling, and confused on TV. He made some errors mixing up some politicians and embarrassed the brass over at MSNBC. Although, I don't know how that could be any more embarrassing than promoting the campaign of Joe Biden, for crying out loud. If Joe Biden can run for president, surely Chris Matthews can stumble all over himself on the nightly news. I mean, come on. But no, it's the creepy, dirty, creepy stuff that may have finally put an end to Chris Matthews' other than illustrious career. He got in trouble. Listen to this. He got in trouble because he compared the victory of Bernie Sanders against the Democrat establishment. He compared that to the 1940 invasion of France by the Nazis. And people freaked out about that. I'm telling you, you can't even draw an analogy anymore without offending all these thin-skinned people out there. I think that's a very appropriate analogy. I thought it was appropriate. I got it. But everyone freaked out. But I have no problem with that. But the creepy, creepy, dirty stuff, yeah, that's a problem, Chris. And none of us are surprised. None of us are surprised because you always struck us as a creep. And now it's just been confirmed by two or three witnesses so far. that it turns out. Now, you want to get really, really creepy? Let's go to the decline and fall file, where we check in with the Prime Minister of England. The Prime Minister of England, his name is Boris Johnson, and he's a 55-year-old man. He has two daughters and two sons by his ex-wife, Marina. This is according to Breitbart. He has two daughters, two sons by his ex-wife, Marina, whom he recently left. And then the Breitbart reports he has a third daughter with another woman, who apparently he's lost track of, or nobody, I don't know, they don't even name her. It's just some unnamed woman who he had a child with. Okay.
They had a name.
It's kind of weird. What's that? They have the name of the other woman, just not in this article.
Yeah, must be Ariane.
Oh.
I saw it today.
Oh, okay. Well.
She's younger.
She's younger? No way.
30.
Well, no. This now you're getting to the actual story. Oh. This is just another woman. This is a woman that, I don't know, they didn't bother to try to find out who it was.
I'm sorry.
These are just the children he has scattered around the kingdom.
Okay.
Yeah. But his wife, or no, not his wife, the Prime Minister of England and his girlfriend, so just saying that is bad.
Yeah.
Just the fact that the Prime Minister of England has a girlfriend, he's 55 years old, that's embarrassing. They have revealed that they are expecting a baby in the summer. Oh, and then after that, they said, we are very pleased to announce that we've also gotten engaged. They plan to get married. So they announce that they're having a baby, and then, by the way, we're also thinking maybe to get married, but we haven't actually picked a date, but we're going to see what we got. Uh-huh. Miss Simons, her Carrie Simons is the girlfriend, yes. She's a 31-year-old former director of communications at Conservative Campaign Headquarters. So it looks like, and maybe I'm off base here, but it almost seems like Prime Minister Johnson left his wife for a younger staffer that he worked with. Yeah. Uh-huh. That's what it looks like. That's all I'm saying.
And he looked messed up.
Oh, that guy looks like he just rolled out of a gutter. You could put a $7,000 suit on that guy. He looked like he was a bum. He looked like he should be pushing a shopping cart down the street.
He's the better guy.
He's the conservative savior of England. According to whatever conservatives are in England anymore. Let's see. His girlfriend, she posted the announcement on Instagram because she's a child. No, well, she's 31, but still. He's 55. So she posted up on Instagram that, we're having a baby. She says, we've got a baby hatching early summer. Mm-mm. And then we got engaged at the end of last year. And I'm feeling incredibly blessed, said the slut girlfriend for whom Boris Johnson left, the mother of his four children. The other woman who had another daughter, she had no comment, at least as far as we know. Nobody even knows who she is. Yeah. Well, she may want to not be named. She probably asked, please, I'd rather not that it gets out. I've tried to put my life back together. Life after Boris. Oh, man. I can't even imagine. All right. Now, since we're talking about creepy people and people who give you the creeps, we're going to check in with Mitt Romney. Well, no. Actually, even more than Mitt Romney, you know who gives me the creeps? Is Matt Schlapp, the CPAC guy. That guy, I don't know. That guy, something is not right with that guy. I can't quite put my thumb on it. But I think it's that he's a lying, phony, baloney, fake, lying, fake, phony. I think that's most of my problem with him.
Then the Mitt Romney is just this.
They should get along, but they're not, because Matt's in the bag for Donald Trump, and Matt hosted his big conservative political action conference this past week, big deal. Well, they had a straw poll at CPAC. And back in 2012, the winner of the straw poll as who should be the next president was one Mitt Romney. That was CPAC. All the brain trusts who are members of CPAC, they all voted in agreement that the best man to be the president in 2012 was indeed Mitt Romney. Well, this year, let's see, 78% of CPAC attendees called the Utah senator an opportunist whom they do not support. So he won the straw poll in 2012, and in 2018, he lost the straw poll, proving that the brain trusts associated with CPAC aren't all that bright. That's all. They all got bamboozled by Mitt Romney. Now, you may have listened to the show back in 2012. I know I did. I know my extremely attractive audio engineer was listening back in 2012 when I sounded the alarm to CPAC and other gullible conservatives that Mitt Romney was a fake and a phony, and he's not. He's a liberal. He's the guy who first started marrying off men in Massachusetts. He's the guy who introduced the first individual mandate for health insurance. The guy is just to the left of Barack Obama, and he's got you people believing he's some sort of conservative. Well, just because he's not gay, that doesn't mean he's a conservative. He's Mitt Romney. How could you people be so bamboozled and fooled and stupid and dumb? But they're now they've seen the light. And they feel like he's an opportunist. Yeah, he's an opportunist, all right. He took the opportunity of your stupidity in 2012 to lead the campaign of Don Quixote, practically, against Barack Obama. Was eminently beatable in 2012. He was very unpopular. But Mitt Romney could not motivate the conservative base because there was too many people out there like me who, yes, we did not like Barack Obama. Certainly would prefer if he were not president. But there was no way we were going to vote for Mitt Romney. Are you kidding me? Are you out of your mind? How could I stain my personal legacy on planet Earth by having cast a vote for Mitt Romney? No way. Not going to happen. All right. So there you go. Matt Schlapp, at some point in the not too distant future, here's my prediction. Is that Matt Schlapp will somehow promote Mitt Romney or vice versa. Somehow that's going to happen as the ebb and flow of politics winds its way forward through history. At some point, Matt Schlapp and Mitt Romney are going to be friends again. That's just a prediction I'm going to make. All right. Because they're birds of a feather is what they are. All right. Now, back to the ducks. At least the duck story I could relate to. CPAC, I can't relate to. Hey, you know what? I bought an electric chainsaw, and then because back at the McBurney compound, I had very low maintenance, or I should say, low power requirement chainsaw duty. If I used my chainsaw, it was only to cut 20 or fewer 2 to 3 inch branches. It was light work. So the electric chainsaw worked just fine. But here now I have much more larger chainsaw duties here, cutting much larger things. And so I went out and I bought a gasoline-powered chainsaw. And wow, let me tell you what. The difference is amazing. And I'm convinced now that the only people who ever buy electric chainsaws are people who never ran a gas chainsaw. Because a gas chainsaw is order of magnitude superior to an electric chainsaw. And I just bought a little tiny one, a little 18-inch, nothing fancy. A little tiny one. And boy, it puts my electric to shame. But the logs I'm cutting are so huge. They're as big as men, some of them. Some of them are as big as men. And what I'm doing is I'm cutting them into quarters. Like if you think about an orange, right, how an orange comes apart, that's kind of what I'm doing in four parts. And so I'm cutting long way down a giant stump that's as big as a human being. And it's heavy duty. And so sometimes my electric chainsaw, it stretches the chain so hot that the chain flies off. And so now my electric is my backup. So while my real chainsaw is cooling down, I go grab my Tesla-inspired chainsaw, and I do about a fifth of the cutting with it in the same amount of time. Anyway, the superiority of the internal combustion engine simply cannot be denied. It's just a better idea, that's all. So if you're thinking about getting a chainsaw, no matter if you've got light duty or heavy duty, get the gasoline-powered chainsaw, but get some earplugs because they're really loud. But definitely a much better idea. And so if I had to endorse anyone this political season, it would not be Mitt Romney. It would not be Matt Schlapp. It would not be Pete Buttigieg. It would not be, I forget his name. Joe Biden. It wouldn't be him either. No. I would endorse whoever it is I think his name was Benz. I would endorse Benz. That's right. Benz, the inventor of the internal combustion engine. Come back. Stop dancing. That almost make you want to dance. That, almost. If dancing wasn't so stupid, that's what I would dance to. All right. So I have confirmation. My extremely attractive audio engineer sourced two different news feeds.
Actually, there's a bunch.
Well, I'm sure. Pete Buttigieg. The first gay candidate to seriously contend for the presidency. Really? You think he seriously contend? You know what? That is true, actually. Now I have to admit it. That he did seriously contend. So we now have a homo and a straight-up Marxist, communist, a Bolshevik, a right-out, both who've run for president and actually garnered the votes of actual Americans who might be your neighbors, who might be my neighbors. Okay, well, that's just, this is really the political divide that has deepened so severely over the past 10 years, I guess, was completely predicted by my pastor like 30 years ago in a lecture he gave on democracy sitting around a campfire. And it's all happening exactly the way he predicted it would, because democracy basically turns everyone into a tyrant. And it divides us from one another. It would be much better if we just had a king. And we could have a good king, we could have a bad king, but it wouldn't end up in what's going to happen here, which is going to be massive amounts of violence and bloodshed. That's how America falls. Very sad. Very, very sad. All right. Speaking of bloodshed, we go to the war file in Doha, Qatar. The United States signed a peace agreement with the Taliban last Saturday. They say the peace deal, Breitbart says, listen to this, Breitbart says it's aimed at bringing an end to 18 years of bloodshed in Afghanistan and bringing all the troops home from America's longest war. All right. Yeah, I don't necessarily have a problem with the length of the war, although I certainly think we could have done it much more expeditiously. What I have a problem with is that we lost the war. That's the problem I have, is that we lost the war. I know that we killed Osama bin Laden, and we actually toppled the Taliban in a month and a half. But that doesn't really matter, does it? Because 18 years later, we're going to withdraw our troops, and the Taliban is going to govern Afghanistan. So by that measure, by any measure, who won that war? Well, we didn't win it. So that's what really bothers me, is the is the end, more so than the length of the war. The end and all the men who died. That's so they say that the U.S. forces will be withdrawing in, well, all of them could withdraw in 14 months, depending on whether or not the Taliban meets their commitment to prevent terrorism. So the Taliban has committed to preventing terrorism. Okay, well, we'll see how that goes. Meanwhile, in Doha, Qatar, Taliban members held a small victory march. That's right, they did, and they shot a video of it, and they put it up on all their Taliban websites, and Taliban Instagram, Taliban Facebook, and Taliban TikTok. They put it all up there. And there's a quote from Abbas Stani, Abbas Stanikzai. Now, he was one of the Taliban's lead negotiators who was involved in the negotiations with our State Department. And he was marching in the parade, the victory parade. Yeah, and he said, "Today is the day of victory, which has come with the help of Allah." Yeah, after the negotiations, he marches in a victory parade. And there's no irony, because he has every right to have a victory parade. They won. Pretty embarrassing, huh? Got more on that, too, by the way, from the Washington Times. America is set to free up to 5,000 Taliban prisoners and begin removing sanctions on top Taliban leaders. Throughout the 18 months of negotiations that we've been doing with the Taliban, while Islamic militants every month or two blow up one of our guys in one of these insider attacks, we're there negotiating with the Taliban, the inspiration of these insider attacks. Throughout the 18-month negotiation, the Taliban had insisted that the U.S. recognize it as the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan. So what the Taliban wanted in order to bring the negotiations to a conclusion, I think that was the point. I think by this time in American history, the point is to just try to get this thing to a conclusion. It's been such a tragic, sad, painful, vicious, and brutal 18 years that... they just outlasted us, you know. They just outlasted us. I remember I predicted when we went to war there. I said, these guys have been crawling around the mountains in their bare feet. It's 120 degrees in the summer. And it's 30 below in the wintertime. Don't underestimate these people. They're very tough people. And they managed to outlast us. But what they wanted in order to bring this to a conclusion was to be recognized as a legitimate government by the United States of America. America apparently did not agree to that. According to the Times, the two sides appear to have compromised throughout the written deal that came out, this four-page document. Throughout the document, the U.S. refers to the Taliban as, quote, the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan, which is not recognized by the United States as a state and is known as the Taliban. Okay, that's way too many words. Okay, you can't say that's their name. The Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan, which is not recognized by the United States as a state and is known as the Taliban. That's just, how would you even begin to try to do a contraction for that? Or not a contraction. What am I thinking of when you just use the first letter of every word? Talk about brain dead. I'm asking a person whose first language is Japanese about an acronym. Isn't that what it's called? Thank you. I tell you what, as I'm getting older, not only is my mind getting slower, but I've noticed that my night vision is getting bad. Like, driving at night is actually getting a little bit scary. I think I had too many years with the lasers flashing in my eyes, and I somehow wore out my rods and cones a little early here. Because driving at night, I'm terrified. I see things. Like, I don't know. I see visions. No, almost... hallucinations. I think there's cars or bears coming out of the woods. It's, I don't know, scary. Where am I now? Oh, okay, so there's the official name of the The IEA, WNRBUSAASKAT. That would be the acronym for the new name of Afghanistan. Let's just go with Afghanistan. We'll just call it Afghanistan. And whether or not the United States recognizes the Taliban as a legitimate government of Afghanistan, they are the effective government of many parts of Afghanistan, despite what the democratic fools we installed in Kabul might try to tell people. They control little tiny parts of Afghanistan. It's mostly ruled by the Taliban. All right. And now listen to this. The Taliban has agreed to permanently sever all ties with Al-Qaeda and other terrorist groups and to never allow Afghanistan to be used as a home base for extremist organizations. Okay.
Trustworthy.
Well, and does anyone see the incongruity of the fact that the Taliban is an extremist organization and they're staying in Afghanistan? So by definition, they're already breaking their word. So they should have to leave Afghanistan. I mean, have we forgotten what the Taliban was and what they did to Afghanistan? They basically enslaved everyone in Afghanistan and brutalized women particularly, but also Christian minorities and other religious and ethnic minorities. They were a vicious, brutal, evil. They were, before ISIS, the Taliban was it. They were the scary, Islamic, crazy nut jobs who were going to destroy the whole world if we didn't stop them. And now we're negotiating with them. It might not be as embarrassing as Boris Johnson and his girlfriend, but it's pretty embarrassing. In fact, it might be more embarrassing than the whole Boris Johnson situation, just as a geopolitical embarrassment. And, the blood and treasure, the lives of the cream of our young men sacrificed. So it's beyond embarrassing. It's sad. And it makes me angry, frankly. It makes me angry. I'm angry about it. All right. Now, do I have time to do the coronavirus? I think I'm going to do it whether I have time or not. The coronavirus is upon us. And some people get the sniffles and some people die. And I've just seen this movie before, as I'm sure most of you remember, with SARS and MERS and West Nile virus. I mean, haven't we been through this through episodes of similar mass hysteria in the past? Because I think that's what's happening. Here we go from the widespread panic file. The Wall Street Journal says nothing in modern memory has dented both demand and supply so quickly for so many industries as the coronavirus. Now that's true. It's really, really intense what's happened around this coronavirus, especially in China. The virus has infected about 85,000 people on a planet inhabited by over 6 billion people. And so everyone's scared that we're all going to die. It's disrupted global travel. It's hobbled supply chains. And it's now the top concern of chief executives worldwide. This is the definition of mass hysteria. It's the definition. It's the textbook definition. Save your pennies, boys and girls, because the market's going to bottom sometime in the next week or two. And then you're gonna have some serious bargains in the stock market. Conferences are being canceled. There's a big conference that I'm scheduled to go to. It could be canceled because the organizers are terrified of a flu virus. Okay, yeah, it's new. Okay, I understand that. More people seem to be dying of it than die from the normal flu. So yeah, we definitely need to pay attention to it. But to halt all global economic activity seems to me to be widespread panic and mass hysteria. Disneyland Tokyo is closed. Suppliers are warning of parts shortages. Some drug manufacturers are paying up to 50% more for some raw materials that they need to make medicine. And Wall Street Journal says uncertainty will put a hold on large corporate investments. Larry Kudlow says don't worry, coronavirus is not going to sink the U.S. economy. Some in the White House have blamed the media coverage for exaggerating the situation and causing hysteria, which I agree with that. There's definitely enough of that going on. Just general widespread panic and hysteria. I think that the coronavirus is bad. I'm against it. And I think we should do something about it. But the last thing we need to do is, hey, let's all panic. Yeah, I knew those hand claps were coming. I was waiting for those.
That's as bad as dancing.
That was a hand clap solo. I was waiting for those hand claps. All right. Now, back to the coronavirus real quickly here. Hold on now. Let me see. Have I exhausted this entire story? Anyway. I am convinced now that the mainstream media now... They need a conflict, a conflagration as big as the impeachment and the Russia hoax and all that stuff. They need something like that or bigger every day. They just got to satisfy this insatiable need they have for clicks and ratings. Because without pumping it up, they're going to die and they know it. In fact, I think we may be witnessing the death throes of an antiquated industry that we called the news. The news is dying. And we're witnessing the emergence of a much more loosely regulated, loosely organized era of social information. We're all going to tell each other what's happening instead of relying on Walter Cronkite to come on at 6 o'clock and tell us what's happening. I believe that the dying news industry, they're going to create some sort of conflagration story, whether they have a real one or not. You know, I mean, you can have a real one like September 11th, right? That stops the whole world and everybody's in shock. Or you can just gin up a story. Like, what was I talking about last week? That sleazy billionaire baby-killing liberal from New York, the former mayor, Bloomberg. Bloomberg may name Hillary Clinton. Well, where'd that story go? Huh? Crickets. Nothing. It had no basis. In fact, they just ginned it up for a day. And they're always looking, and that's what I think with the coronavirus. It's probably as much about trying to criticize Donald Trump as it is about trying to scare people enough to drive them to watch the news, which people just don't watch the news anymore. Anyway, and you know, mass shootings just don't get the eyeballs that they used to get. And so they got to gin something else up. In fact, speaking of mass shootings, let's go to Milwaukee. A story you may or may not have heard because it barely made the news. But in Milwaukee, and I hate when they do this, CBS says... a crazed killer shot and killed 5 people last Wednesday and then killed himself. But CBS says 6 people were killed last Wednesday, including the gunman, in a shooting at the Molson Coors Brewing campus in Milwaukee. It's the Miller plant. It's been known for, 100 years as Miller Brewing, but, you know, it got purchased by... Molson Coors, and a disgruntled employee or ex-employee. I haven't figured out exactly, because the story disappeared so quickly that it was hard to follow up on. But either someone who had recently been fired or was about to be fired or had some sort of conflict with his coworkers who worked at the Miller factory, the Miller brewing plant. He just shot 5 people and then killed himself. And it was a blip below the fold for 20 minutes, and then the story was gone because I mean, we just don't have the emotional capital to expend on these mass shootings like we used to because there's just too many of them. You'd be in a constant state of sadness and melancholy if you actually devoted the amount of attention and grief to each one of these shootings that they actually deserve. But we just don't have the bandwidth for it. None of us do. All the five victims were all employees at the plant, and we think the shooter was too, the killer, the maniac, murderer. But he's dead now, so. So there's your mass shooting, which, like I say, just they don't get the eyeballs they used to. So this new era that we're in it, but we're early on in it, this era that I'll call the era of social information. I mean, let's face it, the news, especially as it evolved in the latter half of the 20th century, the news was corrupt and evil. And it led millions of people into corruption and evil. I mean, just PBS alone. Just the PBS News Hour, the McNeil Lehrer News Hour was just enough. Probably contributed to 50 million people going straight to hell. So yes, the news was corrupt and evil, led millions into corruption and evil. But I think the era of social information will prove just as evil, probably more so. Probably more so, because again, it's the democratization of information. And you know how I feel about democracy. And how, well, there just is not going to be any control on anything. And we've seen what happens when human beings are left without the control of an authority. It always ends badly, and I believe that's what will happen, and that's what. So anyway, there's your coronavirus from the widespread panic file, mass hysteria. We go from there to reason number 1,120 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. It's Madison, Wisconsin, not surprisingly. Madison, the font of the progressive movement, by the way. The Madison Metropolitan School District is being sued by a group of 14 outraged parents. They're opposed to the policy. What's the policy, you ask? It is the guidance and policies to support transgender, non-binary, and gender-expansive students. What is the Madison Metropolitan School District? That's the MMSD, who we'll just call them the MLSD. Guidance policies to support transgender, non-binary, and gender expansive. That's a new one. Gender expansive? Okay. Well, this policy at the school does not require parental consent before kids can alter their gender identity at school. And staff at the Madison Metropolitan School District, the staff is forbidden to discuss these matters with parents without the child's consent. So if Jimmy comes to school and he wants to be called Jenny and put on a dress, the teachers will keep that hidden from the parents. That's official policy in Madison, Wisconsin. Let's see. So pretty outrageous, right? Are you surprised? I'm not surprised. And anyone who's gullible enough to believe that anyone in the public schools has your children's best interests at heart, you just need to wake up because it's just not that way. What they want to do is molest your children psychologically and spiritually at best, and then there's worse too, on top of the spiritual, psychological, emotional, intellectual molestation that occurs. There's other kinds too that are really bad. Anyway, there's a conservative group that are suing. They say the policy violates the parents' constitutional rights. Here's a statement from the good guys, okay? Here are the good guys, the guys whose side we should be on. They're suing the creeps trying to molest the kids and change their genders. Here's what they have to say. Madison schools have adopted policies that violate constitutionally recognized parental rights. A public school district should not and cannot make decisions reserved for parents. That's the president and general counsel who's leading the lawsuit, the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty. And so I'm just sorry. If you try to fight this type of battle based on the Constitution and the law, you're just going to lose. Because eventually the perverts are going to change all the laws to make all this stuff legal. So you really need to sue. When you sue these people, you need to sue them based on the fact that they're undertaking a criminal enterprise to put Johnny in a dress and call him Janie at school and not tell the parents. That's a criminal act. And then if it's not a criminal act, we're just too far down the rat hole, I guess, if it's not. And I don't think it is. In fact, not only is it not a criminal act, it's official policy at the school. It's unbelievable. Just when it comes to the public schools, don't sue. Just flee. Run for your lives. Just get out. I can't believe that. Anyway, shocking. But we have a statement from spokesperson Tim at the Madison Metropolitan School District. Timmy says, MMSD prioritizes working in collaboration with families to support our students, and it is always our preferred method of support. MMSD must also prioritize the safety and well-being of every individual student who walks through our doors each day. And that means sometimes mom and dad can't be told certain things. I made that last part up. Well, I didn't make it up. I mean, it's what they do. But the lisping perv giving the statement didn't actually say that. Just to be clear. All right, there you go, folks. Reason number 1,120 to get your children out of the government schools. Everyone in the government schools is insane. The criminally insane is what they are. All right. The justice file is overflowing with, we've got a... Patricia Wilson, 85, and her son Robert, 64, found dead in their home in Sycamore Hills, Illinois, August 2016, killed by killed from blunt force trauma. Well, a DNA profile was obtained from the crime scene. This was in 2016, but it didn't match anybody in the database. So investigators turned to Parabon Nanolabs, a company that has cracked dozens of cold cases by using genetic genealogy. To crack the Wilson case, investigators and Parabon analysts took the DNA from the crime scene and entered it into the public genealogy databases to try to narrow down possible suspects. The analysts built a family tree based on that DNA, which led to the killer. The killer, that's right. I'm not going to name him, but he has been arrested. The killer has been arrested and faces if convicted, according to... ABC, if convicted, the killer faces life. Okay, well, that's... I see irony there, but other people apparently don't. Anyway, this is great, folks. It could be that because of these public DNA databases that we, the market, is going to do what the government refuses to do, and that is put everybody's DNA in a database so that it becomes very, very risky to commit crimes. The market is going to do it. And unless the government stops us, we may actually institute one of the greatest advancements in the pursuit of justice in the history of all mankind, in that none of us will be able to commit a crime without a significant fear that our DNA will connect us to that crime. And that's a good thing. I know privacy is of concern, right? Privacy is of concern where my bank account is. You know, I don't want people to have access to my passwords to my bank account. So I have concerns about privacy. But when it comes to anonymity and the ability to commit crime, I'm not for that. I'm for everybody being responsible, or everyone having the potential to be held responsible 100%. That's what I'm for. If you commit a crime, it should be 100% guaranteed that if you're investigated, you'll be found out. Because that would prevent crime. That would really prevent crime. And we need that, folks. I mean, more and more people are just turning to murder as just another way to solve a problem. Listen to this. Fox News reports Anthony Todd is facing 4 counts of murder. Prosecutors in Florida are seeking the death penalty. He was arrested last month after his 42-year-old wife, Megan, and their children, Alec, Tyler, and Zoe, ages 13, 11, and 4, found dead. An autopsy said that the wife and children had been stabbed to death by the husband, father. Agents discovered the bodies after going to the house to serve an arrest warrant. Todd was being investigated for healthcare fraud, so he's a thief. Yeah, they say he needed money to pay off personal loans. He was submitting false claims to Medicare. He's basically ripping off the government, so he's a thief. He ends up needing money. And one of the ways he solves his problem is to murder his entire family. One of the ways he expresses the stress of the situation is he kills his entire family. Oh, very sad. Okay, we'll close with reason number 1,121. To get or keep your children out of the government schools, a bill that would allow the Bible to be taught in West Virginia high schools is one step closer to reality. That's right, it would give school districts the green light to offer Bible courses as an elective in high school. The bill's sponsor is some Republican, some moronic, visionless, deaf, dumb, I don't know, Republican. He says the courses offered would be purely instructional. Talking about the impact of the Bible has had on language, the American Constitution, and other parts of American culture. So here's another Republican trying to give hapless parents the idea that there's anything good going on at the government schools. This is like starting a Bible study in a whorehouse, frankly. Starting a Bible study in a crack house. Just don't. Don't bring your Bible to school. Don't go to school for a Bible study. Study your Bible at home. When it comes to the government schools, flee. Run for your lives. They're all criminally insane. I guess that's all I've got to say on that. That's the show for this week, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for tuning in. I want to thank my friends at Real Science Radio and at American Right to Life. You can check them both out on the internet. Yeah, they even have Facebook pages and Twitter feeds and all of that. So check them out. And I want to thank my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview Studios, should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.